You are listening to Justice Radio on WMPG with Emily Goulette from Maine Indigent Defense Center. And today we are speaking with Kim Stevens, 3L at the University of Maine Law School. Kim, if you could introduce yourself.
Hi. This is Finn. This is not even my puppy dog. He's just here to say hi. My name is Kim Stevens. I am a third year law student. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Maine, just outside of Augusta. I graduated high school in 2006, graduated from the University of Southern Maine in 2010, lived in New Orleans for about 7.5 years between the ages of 25 and 32, and then decided to go to law school for some reason. So I am what is considered a non-traditional law student by definitional standards.
Awesome. Well, Kim is also an extern here at Maine Indigent Defense Center for the past two semesters. I believe her last day with us is tomorrow.
I'm going to go to your symposium too, for the most part. Yeah, unfortunately. Sad.
Well, that reminds me, I guess we should start off with a pitch for our event coming up in December. It is at the Randall Center at the University of Maine Augusta campus on Tuesday, December 3rd. It is from 8:45 to 4 p.m. and there will be three different panels of educators, leaders of different organizations in Maine and throughout New England, defense attorneys, judges, prosecutors, all on different panels discussing the current indigent defense crisis, a little bit of what we'll talk about today. It's going to be a great event and there will be free lunch. So I hope some of you listening can join us. But today, Kim is here to talk about a few different things, primarily how the role of student attorneys work in Maine. So I'll let her introduce that a little bit.
So when you are a law student, after you have completed so many semesters or so many and specific classes as prerequisites or co-requisites, there is a rule under the Maine Rules of Civil Procedures that students can then be sworn in as a student attorney. And therefore, as long as there is a supervising attorney, they are allowed to essentially act as an attorney with somebody making sure you're not messing up. So that allows you to work with clients directly, which you're sitting in the classroom, you don't meet clients, you just read about cases and the history of law. And so this is a more hands-on approach that allows you to see what actually being an attorney is like, as opposed to learning what the law is. And that is definitely a practical approach, because as I always compare it to, you can go to bartending school and learn all the drinks, but until you've actually worked behind a bar, you don't know what it's actually like. And so this is similar, that you can sit in a classroom and learn all the rules, for example, Fourth Amendment violations, but until you've actually had to apply the rules to some facts of a case, then you don't actually get that mindset that allows you to have a whole more of a complete idea of what's going on.
So Kim is also part of an organization at the law school called Students for the Six, and they do a lot of advocating for changing this rule and what that would mean for students. So can you talk a little bit about how things are set up right now and why that is not working for students that want to go into this field?
Specifically for criminal defense. Yes. As I said, student attorneys, that's a thing you can do under the bar rules. And as of right now, there's only a very limited number of ways that students who have gotten to that level of their law school education can become a student attorney. Particularly, there is the way through the law school clinics, which there's the Refugee and Human Rights Clinic, there's the Youth Justice Clinic, there is the General Practice Clinic, and then there's the Prisoner Assistance Clinic. However, clinic spots are limited to, I think, possibly 18 total students per semester. So you only have 18 students out of, I think Maine Law has a little over 300 students who are able that way to become student attorneys. The other way, as of right now, is to go into the district attorney's office, and which is a year-long program for most students. And those students go and essentially learn how to be a prosecutor, which is great. If you want to be a prosecutor, what a great step, because that allows you essentially to potentially after a year long be offered a job when you're done with it, and then you're set and you have that job security taken down. However, if you are not interested in going into prosecution, but instead you would like to go into defense, where there's no options to become a student attorney. And it is particularly problematic as the state of Maine is dealing with this crisis, is what we're calling it, a Sixth Amendment crisis, where so many people are unable to have counsel. And part of the clinic, also there's the rural practice clinic, which has two students who live up in Fort Kent for a semester. The rural practice clinic allows students to be things such as lawyer of the day and help with those daily tasks where they're not actually taking on clients, but they are assisting clients. And the allowance of more places to allow for student attorneys would definitely help alleviate that type of situation where potentially someone like myself could be a student attorney who is acting as lawyer of the day with supervision, but the practicing attorney can then focus elsewhere on an actual case that needs the attention. And another thing is that the Resource Council at Maine Indigent Defense Center are the resource councils that can take on the more difficult cases, which not every single person who is rostered on MCPDS can take those cases. It's like, for example, not everybody is allowed to take a murder case. However, most of the attorneys who would be supervising here can. So there is that area of law where they are equipped to deal with the most difficult as well as the lesser difficult cases, which I think personally would be super helpful because then you're going to learn a bit more in the area you're hoping to go into.
I'll just jump into and say Resource Council is, we have three attorneys here that serve as Resource Council, and they are designated by the state, by the commission, to supervise and be a resource for either new attorneys or, you know, an attorney dealing with a case that they have a question on, or maybe it's something they haven't dealt with before, can meet with Resource Council. Resource Council can go watch them and give them feedback or can talk through ideas with them. So as far as supervision in defense firm offices, we definitely offer, you know,
decades worth of experience. One attorney has well over 100 trials he has participated in. The other has been a prosecutor and a defense attorney. And then the third one just has years and years of experience to the point where I started to be like, oh, I was doing research for him and was like, oh, I found this great case. And he laughed and said, I was counsel on that. So yeah, there's definitely a very experienced group of individuals here to guide and make sure you do not mess up, because nobody wants to mess up on defense side because that takes away somebody's freedom potentially. And there's grave consequences, as opposed to if prosecution doesn't do well, there's less negative aspects that could come out of it.
Yeah. And, you know, so recently a civil office was approved to host student attorneys and get them that permission to be filling those roles at a civil office. For example, Kim has been here for two semesters that we've been waiting for approval for defense offices to get that approval. And unfortunately now has kind of lost the opportunity to be able to do that during her law school career, since this is her last semester externing here. And we had been talking about, you know, how students are really going to hesitate to go into a field that they didn't get practical experience in during law school. And there is, you know, with her organization that she's part of, Students for the Six, with how many applicants we get for externs here, more than can be placed here, even without the student attorney approval. Numbers, I think, would probably go up even more with the approval. So there's a clear interest with law students, but we're not able to provide that to them just because of this rule.
Yeah, and it's not even just necessarily the rule to become a student attorney. There's a clear interest in law students in criminal defense. And unfortunately, the law school's hands are kind of tied, as there's only so many classes available. There's no certificate available as of right now. They have been trying to get somebody to take on a certificate. However, the people who they have interviewed go elsewhere because Maine Law just simply, we're an affordable school, which means they actually cannot afford the professors who would take on this type of task, because it's not an easy task for this. So another reason why it's very drawn to a criminal defense firm is that there aren't the classes available to take. So you'd want to get the experience elsewhere to like nail down your Fourth Amendment understanding or your right to counsel and whether or not it was honored that when you requested it. Due to the fact that the classroom can only teach you so much, and that this is, I believe this might be the first criminal defense firm that has requested student attorneys I'm sure if this was approved, it would allow for other criminal defense firms to feel comfortable also accepting interns and externs if they were also allowed to have student attorneys to help facilitate with that. Another aspect of the student attorney is the confidentiality. So we don't get as much client interaction as we would hope because we just simply cannot do that due to confidentiality. But if we were student attorneys, we would then be qualified under that more where we would be, yes, I can be in this room and hear what the issues are and help strategize for your case, as opposed to just, hey, do some research, but you're never actually going to see this person ever face to face.
When we have discussions with people who are in favor of changing this rule, when we have discussions with, you know, the commission trying to help us write the proposal to change this rule, I know that what comes up a lot is wanting to get students into this work so that when they graduate, they can contribute to this crisis that's going on. In your organizations that you work with, Students for the Six, you know, like you said, with the externship office, do you think that that's something that people are considering would be a really important reason to change this?
I do. Yes. I think that it should be a serious consideration as we are the future of this bar. So please don't discount us just because we're students. Everybody was a student. Everyone was blind. No one knew what they were doing after graduation. And I think it would be really good to help alleviate this if we have a more concrete understanding and ability and more concrete feeling that we will not fail going into this type of environment right out of law school, as opposed to dipping our feet in the water and elsewhere and then jumping in. I think more places need to be able to allow student attorneys in general. There's a rule that's pretty clear cut in the rule as long as you meet these requirements. Unfortunately, the judiciary still gets to have, in my opinion, an arbitrary say, as opposed to all these prerequisites are met. There's some reason that a firm was being looked at for sanctions or something. Sure, you'd question whether or not students should be going to that firm, but until that happens, you know, there is a rule. It should be allowed. People should be approved quicker. We should be allowing more students to get practical experience. For example, in firms who want to do it, they should be, it's a big ask to ask this. So firms who are taking the steps such as main indigent defense center should be approved, and they should be approved until they prove that they can't do it. And that, I think, is an issue. At no point has there, I've heard from other externships, questionable outcomes of what's going on there, but I have said nothing but great things, to the point where the amount of people who apply to be externs here doubled. And a lot of people said it because you talk so highly about that place. And I was like, it's great. Like, you're going to get the experience. Everyone, there's no person who you're afraid to go talk to. There's so many different people who have so many different experiences and ways to go about it, which is really good. There's people who are former prosecutors. So you can go be, well, what would the prosecution say? And they go, well, when I was a prosecutor, this is what we would have done. So you get a fuller experience, in my opinion, because there's so many different people who have been practicing law for so long and are successful in it.
And the dogs, right?
And there's four dogs. I mean, so when you are having a tough day, there is that outlet of, I'm having a tough one, let me go snuggle this dog.
Yes. You're listening to Justice Radio with Emily Goulette, and we are speaking with Kim Stevens today. So something else I want to kind of get into is, we had mentioned how important it is to set students up for going into this career. The way that this crisis has been addressed, some things have come out that are blaming both the lack of defense attorneys and the unwillingness of defense attorneys to take more cases or take certain types of cases, and you know, saying that the defense bar needs to step up and really viewing the crisis that we're having in a way that is, one, not beneficial to helping solve this problem at all, but two, it's really taking the blame off of the state choosing to charge a lot more cases than they were this time a few years ago. And I don't personally think it's beneficial at all to put the blame anywhere. I think it needs to be, look, that statistics are showing us there are not any significantly less defense attorneys practicing now than there were a few years ago. but there are far more cases being charged. And instead, it needs to be, if you want to charge more cases, you need to support growing the number of defense attorneys to handle those cases. So like Kim mentioned, attorneys in this office have been prosecutors in the past. They've, you know, have a wide range of experience in the different types of cases that they handle, in the way that they handle those cases. When you extern in the DA's office, you know, if that's what you want to do, that's great. But if you want to do anything besides that, most fields of law, you're going to be having clients, having client interaction. And that isn't something that you're going to be getting at all from that experience, solely just because they don't have clients there. So I would love to hear from you, Kim, a little bit on what you think is drawing people to go extern there and then stay there afterwards. And how could we replicate that with the resources that we do have available?
There is a phrase that is used often. It's a pipeline to prosecution. The DA's office will take most students who apply. They will take so many students, and those students can be student attorneys, which, hooray. And it's a whole year-long program. So say you're a third-year law student, your year-long program is you graduate after a year of being in the district attorney's office, and they likely are going to offer you a job, which that is job security. And that's why a lot of people want to go into the DA's office, because you're going to have that job security afterwards, and government jobs come with benefits, 40 hours a week. There's a lot of things that are positive about that for them. However, if you want to go into criminal defense, because the state's just now starting to open public defense firms and they are not located anywhere near where the law school is, that calls into question a lot of people's motivation. You know, a lot of people don't want to move from Portland up to Bangor after they've lived here or gone to school here, because you don't have that same type of community, in my opinion. Like, I've met a ton of the attorneys that are criminal defense attorneys down here, but I don't know the Bangor area at all. You'd almost go into it blind. There's also the idea of, well, why don't you go work at a bigger firm and then take cases, indigent cases, that way. You're not, as a new attorney, you're not going to be able to choose what you take for cases at all. You're not going to be like, yeah, I want to actually take this case that's only $150 an hour, when typically the people who have been there longer are still are unable to take cases that are less than however much an hour. So you don't have the type of leeway that you would hope, unless you maybe go into private defense and you do it on your own and you're just a public defender, but then you also don't have resources.
Anybody to ask anything.
You don't have anybody. You're just going in blind. You don't have that. And that's a big issue I know with the public defense firms, is that, or by the state, is that they don't want somebody alone. They right. want somebody there who is going to you can go and talk to somebody about these because they're experienced. They're going to talk you through a hard case. They're going to talk you through losing a case. And
they have, you know, it's great that we have those set up now, because they're able to offer that as well. But I know from students that have applied here, if we get 20 applicants and we're able to take 3 or 4 people, I have people say, you know, like, I want to go extern if at the at the PD office in Augusta. That's appealing to them because they are able to work as a student attorney there. However, it's an hour away. You know, we're across the street. You work at the one in Augusta, it's an hour away. Bangor is probably more than 2 hours away.
Not even that. You guys are in between the courthouse and the law school. It's a block away that you walk up the street. Then you're still a block away from the courthouse. There's a lot of draw to this office. There's a lot of benefits. There is...
Or just any doing this in Cumberland and York. Yeah. You know, that's where these students are going to be able to do that. And we don't have a PD office set up here for students to have those externship opportunities with the PD office. And it's just not feasible for 95% of students to be able to go up to Augusta for, you know, the rest of the day after they maybe have a class in the morning and a class in the evening. You can't do that. You know, I had one student tell me they don't even drive. So how are they gonna, that it's just completely off the table for them. So their only options are something that they can do here in Cumberland. And we don't have a PD office here to offer them. So what they're left with,
because it's closer. Yeah.
And everywhere that I feel would be well equipped to take student externs here, having them sworn in as a student attorney is just not an option.
Yeah, there's only so many student attorney positions that are available right now. And in the criminal defense world, unless you're going to count the clinic, there's none. There's no way to be sworn in as a criminal defense student attorney, except for the, you know, PD offices.
Right.
You're traveling hours.
Yeah. For somebody listening to this who's, you know, I'm not a law student. Like, what does this have to do with me?
I didn't think I was going to be a law student either.
Or somebody who says, you know, I've never, this isn't something that is ever going to directly be my problem. We had a discussion before about why this isn't just, you know, student attorneys, law students wanting to get practical experience and having that opportunity. It's not just that, it's impacting the communities here and all over the state. You had said defense firms directly teach impact lawyering. So I would love for you to say a little bit about what you mean by that. What is impact lawyering? And for people who are never going to be directly affected by this random student attorney rule, why is this still a problem for the whole community?
Impact lawyering is learning how to use your law degree to change, affect, alter public policy, you know, public interest policy. A lot of times you read a Supreme Court case or whatever, and a new judicial rule comes out. And that is because the defense attorneys raise some issues like on appeal coming on. And so impact lawyering is taking your law degree and learning how to impact the legislature, essentially, to change rules or adjust rules or form rules stronger. My favorite quote, one of them is that, like, from Abraham Lincoln, and I don't know the exact quote, but it's essentially like, if you want a law repeal, strictly enforce it. Mm-hmm. So impact lawyering here, for example, right before I started for the first time, the decision was handed down on Attorney Ruffner's habeas corpus, mm-hmm. which was his way of impact lawyering, of trying to change the judiciary and allowing people who have been waiting so long for counsel who have not received counsel to be let go, because just because you're charged doesn't mean you're guilty of a crime, mm-hmm. which I think a lot of people, our mindset has altered in this country. You know, it used to be that you'd rather let 9 guilty people go free than put 1 innocent person away. And that's not how this country operates anymore.
Yeah.
That we're putting away innocent people because prosecution just wants the win, as opposed to having what is actual justice. Mm-hmm. What is, did this happen? Or we're just trying to get wins as opposed to working together. So I think impact learning is taking your skill set that you learn and being able to positively change the law or change how things are in ways that will affect everyone overall, you know. And we're saying, maybe this doesn't affect you, but you have no idea why you'll possibly need a criminal defense lawyer in the future. No one can ever tell what's going to happen in the future. And maybe, you know, it's a wrong place, wrong time situation, but you need somebody to navigate that for you. Mm-hmm. Or the other thing is that, like, everyone's like, oh, criminal defense lawyers are bad because they want to get people off. And like, no, perhaps your client is guilty. You're there to help navigate the system for them because they don't know what they're doing. I mean, criminal law is hard. There's so many steps that could happen. So yes, this person did what they did. Now let's help, you know, basically hold their hand and explain everything and make sure everything goes fair.
Yep.
They're treated fairly. Things happen properly. This was done properly, and they will have to pay the consequences, but someone's just there to, like, guide them through those consequences.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of people don't understand that or fully grasp that. That's a big part of what's going on.
Yeah. And as far as how our communities are impacted, not necessarily, you know, impacted by this rule, but impacted by the pipeline prosecution and impacted by how everything that kind of comes down from this rule makes students view the career that they're going into, makes everybody view what's important for students to learn. How do you feel about what you're seeing in the community of people that we serve?
I think everybody needs to learn everything, as opposed to just one side. The prosecution, in my opinion, you're dealing with elements. Did all the elements of the crime happen? Yes, they did. Defense is you're going to lean towards, okay, so what went wrong with the investigation or what have you? Was there a Fourth Amendment violation? Was there, that should never happen? Was there a Fifth Amendment or a Sixth Amendment? Was there constitutional violations? As opposed to looking at the overall, as you would essentially a law school exam of you're going to argue both sides. I think that's really important that people need to still be able to see both sides while the prosecution side essentially just focuses on the elements and the crime is committed or allegedly committed, while defense, especially in this, will gonna focus on the defense side. However, because we have the people who have been in the prosecution, they're gonna be able to say, come with the better arguments on both sides to help adjust or change or view everything. And again, maybe you're losing, but like they're gonna help you view that loss and give you the ideas that you should be focusing on down the road.
Yeah. And I guess what I'm getting at is specifically in indigent defense, we don't want to get to a place where, I mean, we kind of already are in that place, but we don't want to live in a community where we don't have people safeguarding rights for the communities, like you mentioned, you know, that most people aren't going to know what all of their rights are. They're not going to know how to navigate through the system. They're not going to know if they're being treated fairly or not. And we don't want to live in a community where those people aren't being protected. And we need to make sure we have enough people to protect everybody who comes into that situation.
Yeah. I didn't write the Constitution, obviously, but I still have to follow it. And so these laws were made up hundreds of years ago, specifically because we were upset, you know, with what was going on in England and the type of treatment that people were getting. And so they put safeguards in to protect these people. And I think the whole community needs to be protecting, because it's not just one person's rights. It's one person that you're seeing.
And I always tell people, we think, you know, that could never happen to me. It could never be me that's in that situation. But I think a lot of the clients that we serve probably thought that at one point. And you never know when your situation is going to change, when you might need court appointed counsel, when you might need counsel at all. And you thought, you know, this is something that would never happen to you. And so even if you're not being affected by it right now, this is something that everybody should care about, because it could be you at any time.
And even if it's not you personally, it's somebody you know, somebody you love. Maybe it's your child. Maybe it's your father. Maybe it's your best friend. Something happened and they were wronged while it happened, and now they're facing some consequences. But also, I think a lot of people need to know what their rights are. And they're purposely confusing. They're very purposely, but like you need to have somebody who's like trained in that and seeing that, like, no, that just violated not only the United States Constitution, but also the Maine Constitution. You don't have to let somebody in your house to search your home. Like, say no, but a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of coercion that people associate immediately with police, and they don't have the know-how or knowledge or even strength, even if they have the knowledge, to like deny somebody. So then they never violated the constitutional right, because you allowed it to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think we also need stronger takes on that too, is that there is a lot of sidestepping that allow people to be harmed, because it's a harm. Like, that's a harm. I think privacy is a huge thing that needs to be brought back into justice. A lot of people's privacy is taken. There's no privacy anymore. And that's an issue to me. I think that's one of the biggest things in justice, is like privacy. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to be private.
And yeah, that's, you know, a perfect place for us to end, actually, because, well, thank you for listening to Justice Radio. Tune in next time when we actually will be talking about what those rights are and what you should know to protect yourself. A big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series. Thanks.